Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We'll give praise to science because science is golden.
After updates on COVID, the Equality Act, and threats to abortion rights,
we'll talk about evolutionary communication with Professor James Lull.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The West African bloc ECOWAS and the United Nations are calling for restraint in Niger, where violent protests erupted this week following the second round runoff of the presidential election on Sunday. Ruling party candidate Mohamed Bazoum was on Tuesday declared the winner, but opposition candidate Mahamane Ousmane, a former president, has alleged fraud. His supporters have taken to the streets in the capital, Niamey, burning tires, throwing rocks, and setting buildings on fire, according to media reports. ECOWAS and the UN issued a joint communique on Thursday, strongly condemning the violence. They invited stakeholders to comply with legal provisions on settling electoral disputes and encouraged them to work together to bring the electoral process to a conclusion. The two organizations also underlined their readiness to support Niger in its efforts to consolidate peace and democracy. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, and the pharmaceutical giant AstraZeneca signed an agreement this week for supplying COVID-19 vaccines to the global partnership working to make these medicines affordable to all countries. UNICEF and its procurement partners will have access to up to 170 million vaccine doses for some 85 countries. Vaccine deliveries are set to begin in the first quarter of the year, taking into consideration factors such as country readiness and national regulatory authorizations. UNICEF said this is the third such vaccine agreement following arrangements announced earlier with Pfizer and the Serum Institute of India. Finally, in more vaccine news, a campaign is underway in South Sudan to protect more than 2.8 million children against polio following an outbreak last September, which has spread to 17 counties in all states in the country. Nearly 40 cases of the disease have been confirmed so far, the World Health Organization, WHO, reported on Thursday. The campaign began in November and is now in its second phase, with workers going from house to house to vaccinate children while following COVID-19 protocols. WHO and partners are supporting the Ministry of Health in the goal of reaching children under 5 and in ensuring South Sudan remains polio-free while improving routine immunization coverage. Widespread displacement due to ongoing conflict and insecurity, as well as perennial flooding, have led to low rates of immunization, making children more vulnerable to polio. Roughly 2.6 million under fives were inoculated during the first round of the vaccination campaign, which was carried out in two phases over November and December. Deanne Penn, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-host Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are glad to say goodbye to this beastly month of February, as Gilbert and Sullivan put it. And this week, of course, we saw that grim milestone of over 500,000 people in the United States dead from COVID-19. So we're looking forward to a better March.
And I'm Dan Barker, co-host of Free Thought Radio. This is the February 25th. 2021 edition of Free Thought Radio, Annie, Laurie, and I are hosting this show from our Safer at Home studio in Madison, Wisconsin, while once again, Buzz Kemper is engineering from Audio for the Arts, which is his recording studio right near the Wisconsin State Capitol.
Buzz's studio is Audio for the Arts, and we're calling our home studio Audio for the Aparts. Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which has two purposes: to keep religion out of government, which is a constant struggle, and to educate the public about the views of those of us who are non-believers. And actually, that's a constant struggle too, although we are making some headway. After having our advertisement censored by CBS for 6 years, our advertisement with Ron Reagan, they did accept it this month, so there's some progress. So, speaking of advertising, FFRF has a billboard. We talked about it. We put it up for Darwin Day, and it shows Mr. Darwin with a mask on saying, "In science, I trust," and our message is, "Masks on, sleeves up, stay safe." Speaking of sleeves up, Dan, you got your vaccination this week.
I
have vaccination envy.
That's a new term now in the vocabulary, vaccination envy. I did. On Tuesday, I got my first vaccination, a Pfizer vaccination. And I have to say, it was kind of moving, you know, because I was just watching the Perseverance landing on Mars and thinking about, boy, look at science. Look what science can do. And incredible. I mean, almost, for an atheist like me, it was almost a religious experience. Then when I drove up in that line, I had to stay in my car, and then I was watching all the doctors and everybody. I was thinking, this is science too. And when the woman came to the window to give me the shot, I said, "Praise be to science." And she laughed and she said, "That's right."
So how are you feeling?
Well, I'm feeling no different at all. It's just like a normal shot in the arm, you know. The only thing I'm noticing is that my jokes are not as funny as they used to be.
Well, fortunately, you suggested a witticism for our newest face mask, speaking of COVID, which is, what did you say, Dan?
Science is golden.
And it's very cute, and you can get it at our website at ffrf.org. It's under the, I think, apparels, where we have some other our In Science I Trust mask.
Well, that's how I've been feeling, science.
So I'm anxious
golden.
To get my shot, my first one, March 15th, but it troubles me greatly that all of these locations that we're being given here in Madison, Wisconsin are way the hell out. If you didn't have a car and you didn't have time, how are you ever going to get this shot? And this is an inequity we are seeing around the nation, and I sure hope that changes soon.
So on today's show, what does the field of communication have to do with the study of religion? In the second half of our show today, we're going to hear from author and professor James Lull about his book, Evolutionary Communication, in which he shows that ideas and ideologies co-evolved to produce the belief systems that we have today.
And we should also say that he was what the original inspiration for that movie set in Vietnam. Hello.
Oh, good morning, Vietnam.
Good morning.
That's right, because he
good
worked there in the
Vietnam.
Radio station.
He worked in the radio station.
That's right, so we'll hear a little bit about that.
Before that, in a few minutes, we're going to talk with FFRF's Ann Nicole Gaylor, reproductive rights intern, Barbara Alvarez. She has done commentary on state church issues and the ban, the very serious ban on abortion in South Carolina. So we'll be talking about both those issues with her momentarily.
Besides this show, Free Thought Radio, we also have a TV show, Free Thought Matters, produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. It broadcasts on Sunday morning in many cities around the country. Our guest this week on Free Thought Matters is Sikivu Hutchinson. She's the founder of Black Skeptics Los Angeles. She's a feminist, atheist, novelist, playwright, and director. We talk with her about social justice and gender and about her book, Humanists in the Hood, Unapologetically Black, Feminist, and Heretical.
Sikivu told us that not all African Americans are religious.
African Americans are predominantly religious. 87% of African American women, for example, are religiously identifying. And African Americans, certainly, if we look at the demographics in the United States, have some of the highest rates of religious observance. That being said, there has, throughout African American social history and American history in general, been a very critical and very vocal African American humanist and free thinking population, stemming all the way back to the times of enslavement.
That was a fascinating interview, which you will want to see. You can watch that Free Thought Matters interview with Sikivu Hutchinson this Sunday on broadcast TV in Chicago, Denver, Houston, Los Angeles, Madison, Wisconsin, Minneapolis, New York City, Phoenix, Portland, Oregon, Sacramento, Seattle, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco.
And for stations and times, check FFRF.org. If you don't live in those broadcast areas, you can watch Free Thought Matters right now on FFRF's Free Thought Matters YouTube channel. You can go and sign up on the playlist also to get notification.
So, in the news, the Freedom From Religion Foundation is demanding that the Federal Emergency Management Agency rescind a proposed $1 million plus handout for a Kentucky church or tornado shelter in the city of Versailles. That's how they pronounce it. Versailles, Kentucky.
But it's spelled like Versailles in France.
Well, it's spelled like Versailles, but they can say it the way they want. A concerned Versailles city resident and taxpayer alerted us about this decision to spend public money to pay for a new church building on church property.
So we've written to Versailles city officials asking for more details, and now we have confirmed that FEMA has tentatively approved a grant of approximately $1.2 million to construct this new church building. It will be owned by First Baptist Church. It will be used for worship, and all they're doing is agreeing to let the public use the building during an emergency. This is outrageous and unconstitutional. FEMA cannot direct federal funds to be used to build a worship place. So,
in our letter to FEMA Acting Director Robert J. Fenton Jr., written by attorney Chris Lyon, we point out that the Establishment Clause prohibits the government from funding religious worship. FEMA should revoke this grant immediately. We also request that they review the application to make sure that the church has not misled the agency on the purpose of the grant.
So FEMA may not spend a good chunk of taxpayer money on erecting a building primarily to be used for worship. Non-believers, non-Christians, and Christians who are not Baptist ought not be forced to finance a sectarian religious structure. This is just basic.
The U.S. House of Representatives is slated to vote this week.
Possibly, maybe, it might be right now.
Maybe
we don't
today,
know.
On the Equality Act, that's H.R. 5, which would finally cement federal civil rights protections for LGBTQ Americans. We are asking FFRF members, and we're asking you, to call on Congress to immediately pass this long overdue Equality Act. The bill passed overwhelmingly in the House in the previous term and was just reintroduced on February 18th by Representative David Cicilline of Rhode Island. Senators Jeff Merkley of Oregon, Cory Booker of New Jersey, and Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin are expected to reintroduce a Senate version soon.
Yes, this is a chance to finally get this passed because this has been an oversight that the historic 1964 Civil Rights Act and as amended has not included LGBTQ citizens. So currently 30 states have no anti-discrimination protections for LGBTQ citizens, and in such states they can be fired from jobs, evicted from homes, denied service from restaurants and stores, or refused credit from banks simply because of this identity. And of course, the underpinning of this discrimination is entirely religious in nature.
Christian nationalists exploit this loophole in federal civil rights law to discriminate under the guise of their distorted view of so-called religious liberty. In fact, this week, a number of American bishops sent a letter to Congress opposing this bill, claiming that the Equality Act will discriminate against people of faith.
So it's upside down. They want the right to discriminate and break the law. If you want to take action, you can visit FFRF.org news link, and then there's an action drop down. And we have a simple automated system where you It will find your member of Congress, and you can urge your member of Congress to support the Equality Act, and you can adapt the talking points, which we suggest. Personalized messages are always the most effective, but this takes you a matter of a couple of seconds.
Another recent action alert that you will find on that page concerns the Colorado legislature.
The Colorado legislature is considering a good bill to expand the rights of survivors of child sexual abuse. This bill, SB21-073, would remove the statute of limitations for civil actions regarding sexual misconduct and would also remove several other restrictions that prevent sexual assault survivors from receiving justice through the courts if they don't bring a lawsuit immediately following the assault. And, of course, this is largely aimed at the Catholic Church and other churches that have been harboring predators.
In the last few years, in the wake of a string of reports of rampant sexual abuse by clergy around the country, many states have taken similar action to expand the window of justice for survivors of childhood sexual abuse. The Catholic Church is actively lobbying to keep these barriers to justice in place, compounding its disgusting history of protecting abusers and church assets at the expense of the children under its care.
The Colorado Senate Health and Human Services Committee held a hearing yesterday on this bill, Wednesday, February 24th. FFRF submitted written testimony in support of the bill and asked our Colorado members to also urge the members of the committee to support the bill. If it gets out of committee, we will again be urging Coloradans to vote to protect children from religious predators.
As we reported on an earlier show, FFRF is asking the state of Wisconsin to launch a formal investigation into the abuse of children by clergy and religious organizations. Annie Laurie, you wrote a book about this back in 1988. Right?
Yes, and the Freedom From Religion Foundation was the publisher of that book, and it was the first nonfiction book calling attention to clergy abuse of children, and it was because I was editor of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, and editing a column called Black Collar Crimes, and just became aware. I mean, it was just three or four coming in every day or every week, and mostly criminal, but some were civil, and it was an epidemic. And then it became a big issue. Other newspapers really followed suit with major exposés and investigation. But we still follow this in our Black Collar Crime column.
And that book is called Betrayal of Trust, Clergy Abuse of Children. That book's out of print now, but you can read it for free online. Just do a web search for Betrayal of Trust, Gaylor, FFRF, and you will find that book for free.
Yeah, or you can just go to FFRF.org under publications link, and then there's a link to out-of-print books there.
Okay. So we're going to take a break. After the break, we're going to talk with Barbara Alvarez about one of her...
Well, we're going to talk about the chilling vote to basically make abortion illegal in South Carolina. And we are also going to talk about shunning and the cult of Christian nationalism and shunning in terms of retaliation against Representative Adam Kitzinger, who is an Illinois member of Congress, who's being disowned by his family because he refused to support Donald Trump after the insurrection.
That'll be interesting. And then we're going to hear from professor and author James Lull about evolutionary communication and religion. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit FFRF.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are talking on the phone with Barbara Alvarez, who is the Freedom From Religion Foundation and Nicole Gaylor Reproductive Rights Intern. And it's nice to have you back on Free Thought Radio, Barbara.
Thanks for having me.
And you have been writing some excellent blogs in the past week for the Freedom From Religion Foundation, including commentary on a very bad development from the end of last week, which is that the South Carolina legislature basically banned abortion. And do you want to talk about what happened?
Sure. So the legislature just recently passed a bill that prohibits virtually all abortions. They call it a fetal heartbeat bill, which I really don't like that phrase at all, because fetal heartbeat is a misnomer. Medical scientists and Ted Anderson, who is the president of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, has said that it's really not, he refuses to use the phrase because it's not accurate. What is going on is there's an electrical flickering of a portion of the fetal tissue. And what legislators are saying is that as soon as that flickering occurs, which can be as early as 5 weeks gestation, that abortion will be banned, and that providers could receive a felony for conducting an abortion. So most women don't even know that they're pregnant at that point, and it's not a heartbeat at all. So this is a really dangerous bill.
So it has been already, it was immediately litigated by Planned Parenthood, and it's been stayed. But I think that this is a presage of things to come, that we have so many of these states that are passing basically bans on abortion, and they're all aiming at our new Supreme Court, are they not?
Absolutely. Now that we have a newly ultra-conservative Supreme Court, Justice Amy Coney Barrett is the newest justice, who is a Christian nationalist. This bill is designed to set a new precedent and to overturn Roe v. Wade, to really challenge Roe v. Wade. So this bill, legislators know exactly what they're doing with it, and it has the possibility of fundamentally changing abortion care for women throughout the entire country.
And at your blog, which you can find a link at our news, FFRF under news to our blogs, but it's also up on Patheos. It's called Free Thought Now. Your blog is headlined South Carolina Abortion Ban Presages National Threat. You go into the decline of women's health when they can't get abortion. Could you briefly talk a little bit more about those statistics?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Any medical professional will say the evidence base shows that abortion is safe and effective. In fact, major complications are less than 1%, and that when women are denied abortion, their health is worsened. In fact, a recent study that was published showed that women's health declined over 5 years after they were denied an abortion, and that there is no data that suggests that abortion restrictions protect women's health. We also know that childbirth is 14 times more dangerous than complications from an abortion. So this bill just doesn't make sense. It puts women's health in danger. And if they're really concerned about women's health, they could be making legislation that could make childbirth safer. And that's not what they're doing. Instead, they are taking away constitutional rights.
So this kind of action by our states is really an argument for the much-needed court reform that we've been talking about at FFRF. And so read that blog. And then I want to talk about a fascinating blog you also did recently, Barbara, called The Cult of Christian Nationalism. And you picked up on this retaliatory action against a member of Congress who had supported Donald Trump after the January 6th insurrection. You want to talk about that?
Definitely. So Representative Adam Kinzinger is a six-term Illinois member of Congress, and he was just one of 10 GOP representatives who voted to impeach President Trump after the January 6th deadly insurrection. And he received a lot of backlash, not only from the Republican Party, but from his own family. His family sent him a letter that basically shunned him and told him that he was a disappointment not only to them, but to God. And in the letter, they keep referring to Christian principles and saying that he's now a member of the devil's army and that he has rejected God and Christianity in favor of the devil. So this speaks a lot about Christian nationalism and how it's infiltrated our politics in this country.
So he responded to this. This went public, and they basically repudiated him. He responded and said that his family had been brainwashed by conservative churches, correct?
Yep, he said that his family was brainwashed by conservative churches, and in the letter they do reference they reference Franklin Graham, who is the son of evangelist Billy Graham, and he's also head of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. They also reference Robert Jeffress, who's a senior pastor of the First Baptist Church in Dallas. So they have clearly been influenced by these major Christian leaders, evangelist leaders.
And, of course, the Freedom From Religion Foundation is calling for an investigation into the Christian nationalist roots of the January 6th insurrection. But this particular anecdote shows, you know, that it's infiltrated, how much it's infiltrated into Congress as well.
Definitely. And Robert Jeffress, going along with your note about how Christian nationalism has infiltrated the insurrection, Robert Jeffress said that President Trump had every right to view the election as fraudulent. So really doubling down on this lie.
Yeah, your blog quotes him saying, "Our country is in trouble. We need God's healing and we need God's help." That's mm-hmm. a mega church pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And you also point out that many other people, aside from this Christian, the January 6th insurrection, get shunned when they leave the religions of their families.
Mm-hmm.
So this
yeah.
is one example.
Yep. Yeah, shunning is a form of social control that's often seen in a lot of religious communities. And this is an example of somebody who is shunned for not toeing the line and for violating the group's norms.
And I should add, you know, he's hardly a progressive hero, very anti-abortion, but he did the right thing on January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Barbara, thanks so much for your commentary. And you can catch Barbara's blogs at our website under the news link, fffref.org. Very worth reading. Thanks again, Barbara.
Thanks so much.
We're going to take a break. That was very interesting. After the break, we're going to hear from professor and author James Lull about evolutionary communication, which is the title of his book, Evolutionary Communication and Religion. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at fffref.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
It ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, they ain't necessarily so. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Dan and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
James Lull is Professor Emeritus of Communication Studies at San Jose State University. He's also taught at UC Santa Barbara, UC Berkeley, University of San Francisco, and he got his doctorate right here at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, where we are today. And he holds other doctorates from other schools around the world, actually. He's taught all over the world, China, Brazil, Venezuela, Finland, Denmark, England. There's a huge list of countries. He's the author or editor of more than a dozen books that have been translated into a lot of languages. He also has worked as a professional journalist, a media programmer, a radio announcer. Maybe you'll give us your radio voice here.
I'll do my best.
And he's been a program director from a number of radio stations and Wow, this bio has a huge list of accomplishments, and he's written essays that have been published in many newspapers, the Los Angeles Times and so on. He has a brand new book, which just came out this year, right, 2020?
It came out last month.
Just came out last month. It's the first comprehensive evolutionary approach to the study of communication. The book is called Evolutionary Communication, an Introduction by James Lowell. So welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Well, thank you, Dan.
So I want to say, reading your book, you describe it as a textbook.
Yeah.
But the material is so fresh, mm-hmm. and it's such a new, groundbreaking approach to mm-hmm. communication that, to me, it doesn't read like a textbook. It just reads like an interesting, science or communication book. So tell us, in a nutshell, what's behind your new book?
Well, I'm calling it a textbook, and I have really used many of the conventions of textbook writing for this book, because I want to make it accessible. You know, it can be such a barrier to try to introduce the idea of evolutionary thinking into an academic discipline that doesn't already have it. So the idea that I came with for this particular book was to give it a textbook appearance so that it could be used in universities, colleges.
And it's published by Routledge, which
is
a respectable.
It's published by Routledge, which has a huge textbook division. And I've written about evolution in other contexts and with kind of more monograph books, but this one is written to be organized well in a way that could, kind of create a syllabus for a class and also make it easy for a professor in any of these universities to say, well, you know what, I'm going to read this and maybe I could use that in my class with my students.
Yeah, but it's not just for students. I mean, when I think of a textbook, I sometimes think of a boring kind of, should we be taking notes kind of a thing. When this reads like a basic popular science book that you would pick up anywhere, like Sapolsky's work or something.
Well, I hope so. I try to be an engaging writer.
Yeah, you are.
And we work with such interesting material.
Yeah.
When you're writing about evolution, you're writing about religion, the relationship between the two.
So what is the relationship between evolution and communications as a theory?
First of all, let's look at it this way. We don't have, in the discipline of communications, or here in Madison it's called communication arts. Other places it's called communication sciences. Some places it's called communication arts and sciences, because it's sometimes in the social sciences colleges and sometimes in the humanities. So it's such a broad discipline, and it's really a kind of a discipline that people don't know what you're talking about.
I think about like rhetoric.
That's the origin of it. Particularly rhetoric and public address, public speaking. Mm-hmm. And of course, by the way, I've written a public speaking textbook that has a big circulation. And that was where I really learned how to write for students. Mm-hmm. And I try to use some of the techniques that I used in that writing for this book. But as you say, the material itself reads more like a science-oriented book. But I've tried to keep the language level and the organizational structure. And one of the other techniques that you use in public in textbook writing is lots of examples. So, good graphics, good tables, good photos, all of that kind of stuff enhances the appeal or broadens the accessibility of it.
Because it does. You did a good job. But basically, what's the point? What are you basically trying to say in one or two sentences?
Well, I'm trying to redirect some of the vectors of the discipline of communication, sort of like what happened in psychology when evolutionary psychology came in. It was a kind of an assault on the standard way of dividing up the discipline of psychology, and it offered a new way to look at things that are happening cognitively and emotionally. And so this is sort of the same idea, Dan, within the communication. Now, you mentioned rhetoric, which is one of the foundational elements of the field, for sure, with theater, public address. But then on the other side, you have the social science approach to communication, which starts in psychology and social psychology, especially post-World War II theorizing that went on, trying to give communication, acts of communication, the behavior of communicating, a role in the social psychology of a particular society. So I'm trying to say, okay, we've got these two main origins and sort of lines of analysis and teaching. Let's broaden that to a third one. In order to make that happen, the book that I've written, Evolutionary Communication and Introduction, has, for example, a chapter called The Basics. And The Basics just lays out in, you know, fairly simple terms, the foundation of evolutionary thinking in general, not with respect to communication in particular, but just sort of, if you don't know anything about evolutionary theory, and believe me, there are a lot of professors of communication studies that know very, very little about that.
And a lot of students.
Yes, and they're students. So they can read that chapter, and it kind of gets everybody up to speed.
So you're really championing Charles Darwin. Didn't you write in the introduction that you came to this whole thing after reading Charles Darwin's books?
And I read the books with an eye toward what does Darwin have to say about communication. And he doesn't often use the word communication, but there's lots of ways that he was talking about actually what is communication, even through behavior, because it is behavior that communicates too, not just language. Yeah. So we have a rich area to cultivate and hopefully to exploit in order to get a lot out of it in terms of communication. So I was looking at the origin of species and the descent of man in particular for what does Darwin say about communication or something related to it, made those notes, and then let that be kind of a platform for several of my analyses.
Yeah. So it's not just that there's some ignorance of evolution. There's also some dissent. There's also people who, you know, downplay evolution. They, you know, religious people, for example, a lot of evangelicals or creationists might come into a class and, you know, they disagree with Darwin. And so you're making a point that everything is informed by evolution.
Absolutely. And, you know, the idea is that, of course, we know that what you're saying, that the evolutionary ideas are rejected by people who have strong religious backgrounds, and not just in communications, where it's basically unfamiliar, but in biology, even in the natural sciences. And certainly, my wife, for example, is an elementary school counselor. Well, you know, you have parents there who would very much object to any teacher who's kind of guiding the students toward the name Darwin or the idea of evolution if it goes against their religious beliefs. And they can make those thoughts known to the administrators of the schools, you know, and the teachers can get in trouble. So this is a problem that we have in education in general. It's less severe at the college or university level, but it's there all the way through.
So we're going to take a break in about a minute, but let me tell you, one of the things that struck me about your book was I had always thought communication was one of the byproducts or fruits of evolution, but in your book, you say that communication is the motor. Communication in the human species drove evolution. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Well, because it starts with the single cell. And if you go back and look at the very first forms of organic life on Earth, 3.8 plus billion years ago, what you see is the cell communication. It gets kind of confusing with cell phones, but we're talking about microscopic cells now, single cells, and how they communicate and actually how they form communities. So there, and this is laid out in the book, that there is a distinct way of looking at sort of external and internal communication for the single bacteria cell, the original form of life, and how those group together, how they interact with each other, how they form what I call microbiological communities that are formed on communication and organization and what I would like to say is cooperation. Because as we know, cooperation is fundamental to all forms of social life, and cooperation is the side of evolutionary theory that is too often ignored. It's too much about competition. But sorry, folks, it's really about cooperation. And yes, of course, there is competition. But the cooperation and the forming of community is fundamental to evolution, and communication is what makes that happen.
So in order to cooperate or to compete, you have to somehow connect or communicate or integrate with other people in this species that's evolving.
This species and other species.
We have to take a break. We're talking with James Lull, author of Evolutionary Communication, and he's a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Thank you, Professor Lull. After the break, Professor James Lull will tell us how religion connects with all of this, especially how religion co-evolved with communication. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're continuing our conversation with Professor James Lull, author of the book Evolutionary Communications.
So you have a whole chapter in your book, Evolutionary Communication, an introduction, a whole chapter about the connection between religion and communication as a social species. How does religion play into communications?
Well, first of all, Dan, you know, that chapter is called Ideology and Religion because I want to show, and I hope I do, you know, in that chapter, that the systematic nature of religious thought is ideological, not just cultural. So when we look at how ideology fosters consciousness through hegemonic social processes, the use, in this case, of symbolic forms of all kinds in order to make the persuasive message, which is pretty simple when you think about it, you know, accept God and go along with the program, that there is a tremendous relationship between ideology as just a way of thinking about ideas and ideals. Ideology is a system of ideas and ideals. So you have this interlaced system of ideas that has a point of view. Those are the ideals. So I try to make a connection between calling theology and religious thought an extension of ideology and making or a form of ideology.
So we all grew up with a culture around us that imparted that to us. It could be economic theory, it could be religious idea. I mean, as children, we didn't really, our culture put it on us. And so you make a distinction in your book between biological evolution. You talk about the biosphere, and then you use the word ideosphere. Is that how you'd say
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's just to introduce this idea of ideas and ideals,
which
ideology,
can
theology.
And they can evolve as well.
Absolutely. As well, they do all the time as we see around us, you know, how religious ideology does evolve.
Since the early agricultural time in the...
From the beginning, certainly with those who had access to the very first written forms, the cuneiform and the using of the little sticks to embed scratches into the clay tablets.
With the Gilgamesh epic and all of those ancient.
And the people who were allowed to engage in that kind of behavior, who were the first literary persons on Earth, the whole thing was a privileged class of people who were related to the economic and religious leaders of the time during the agrarian revolution.
So how do religious ideas evolve? They started simple, and then now, you know, evolution is like a bush, right? And today, look at the bush of religion. Look at all these different ideologies.
Mutations, if you want to call it, if you want to use the biological terms. You know, religion mutates in a way, sort of like language does. Like, if you think of religion as a form of culture, which it is, then it is going to be changing and adapting to the times and to the influences that the cross currents that occur at any one particular time. Look at our own history in American history right now. The incredible force of evangelical Christianity on the political structure of the country, and then how that informs other aspects of our life, the economic aspects and everything else. So education. So these are all interrelated for sure.
So I kind of think an ideology can make you lazy because, well, you can just follow the party line. You can just, what my pastor says or what my church says or what my political leaders say, I don't have to think.
It's conformist by nature.
Think too much.
It really is.
So do you think the parallel between the biosphere and the idiosphere, do you think there's a survival of the fittest among religions?
Well, certainly, and let's take this back to what we were talking about before, Dan, with community. What is religion? It is fundamentally a safe place. That's how it's perceived. It's a safe place that has ideological and cultural components to it that you learn by the practice of being in that safe place.
And people like that. They like feeling like they're part of
the
safe.
We all like that. We all like the idea of community. You know, I grew up in a little town in Minnesota. It was a very close-knit community and a very religious community, too, by the way. My father, had to be in the Presbyterian church. Uh-huh. Because everybody in town had to be in one church or another, or you were really considered an outlier. So community has that sense, but it also has sense within the particular religion itself. And it is a safe place to go. It is a roadmap for life. There are all kinds of conveniences in there. It's pretty easy to just say, hey, I give up. I'm taking that. Let's go along on that ride.
So that's good if you're inside of that circle. But that sense of community also creates an in-group, out-group kind of thing. There's also the competition among those communities that, well, you know from history.
It's a business. I mean, you know, religion really is a business, isn't it? Especially when you look at the amount of money that's involved.
Yeah.
And the fact that we don't tax religious organizations is just criminal.
You can join the Freedom From Religion Foundation for $40 a year. We don't ask for 10% of your gross income like a lot of churches do, which isn't to say that atheists and agnostics are not charitable people. And you talk about the growing percentage of non-believers in the United States in your book.
Well, that's for sure, and not only here but in Europe too. Then this comes into contrast with the growth in religious faith in other parts of the world.
If we can still use that word.
In the lesser developed, lesser developed parts of the world. That's understandable, where there's less education, where there's less economic development, where there's less freedom for women to gender equality, mm-hmm. there will be a stronger religious impact, and the communities will form around that.
Mm. So your book's about, the name of the book, I'll repeat for the listeners, is called Evolutionary Communication and Introduction. Since it's an evolutionary approach, it's a science book. It's approaching communication from a science perspective. Do you think there's an overlap between science and religion? Are they totally separate, or do you agree with Gould that they're non-overlapping magisteria?
Well, this is, of course, the very interesting issue, and in fact, I take that up, the Gould's argument and why he developed the argument that he was a non-believer, as you know.
Yeah, of course.
And so this is so interesting, you know. And he was really a gentleman trying to find an accommodation. I sort of give him the benefit of the doubt on that whole controversy. But on the other hand, then, of course, you've got Richard Dawkins and others on the other side who will go, wait a minute, you know, there is no accommodation. Religion may or may not be in part a kind of a product of organic and cultural evolution, but it has to maintain a separate space, at least in the academic world.
Mm-hmm. Well, because most religions are making claims about the natural world. They're making claims that are scientifically testable. And so in a sense, religion itself ought to be scientifically, at least some of those claims they're making, right?
It ought to be it is testable, and it's found to be lacking. That's exactly what's happened. The more the science grows, the further down religion goes on the priorities of people in the developed world, at least.
Well, thank you very much, James Lowell. A fascinating book. It's called Evolutionary Communication and Introduction.
Thank you.
So I think there's a minute or two here to talk about the newspaper that the Freedom From Religion Foundation publishes and the March edition of that newspaper, which we would love to send you if you're not already receiving it. It's edited very capably by P.J. Slinger, and it's a special issue after the January 6th insurrection. It was our first issue after that. It's full of information, including an exclusive 3-page primer on Christian nationalist senators and members of Congress who voted against Biden's certification after the January 6th insurrection. In a sense, they were like the protesters, the mobs outside the Capitol. They were inside doing the same thing. And their Christian nationalist underpinnings are quite shocking. This is an exclusive. You can get it from our newspaper, Free Thought Today. We have a wonderful column by Phil Zuckerman, who is the secular studies expert on the secular values voters and how we voted in the last election. We have a wonderful article by Robert P. Jones on the strong links tying Christianity and white supremacy to the January 6th insurrection. Of course, he's the CEO and founder of PRRI, which is the major polling institute. We have a charming piece. It's a meeting of the two free-thinking minds about when Frederick Douglass met the great agnostic Robert Ingersoll in Peoria in the 19th century. And then we have something really unique, which is a compilation of all the Bangladeshi freethinkers who have been killed or almost killed because of their atheism and non-religion. And it's written by an exile from Bangladesh, Subrata Shuvo. And it documents years and years of killings in the name of religion. So there's a lot there, and you can ask for a sample copy at ffrf.org on the homepage. Just click the Ask for Info link.
We want to say thank you to listeners in Philadelphia to WOOM, to listeners to Free Thought Radio in Madison, Wisconsin, WIDE and WMUU, in Janesville, Wisconsin, WADR, in Bryan, Texas, KEOS, Columbia, Missouri's KOPN, Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, San Marcos, Texas, KZSM, Bellows Falls, Vermont, WOOL, Black Sheep Radio, and hello to listeners to WRFI in Ithaca and Watkins Glen, New York, and of course to all the podcast listeners. Give us a thumbs up on your podcast provider, and tell your friends to visit our page at ffrf.org/news/radio.
And as I said, you can ask for more information, including a sample of our newspaper at ffrf.org. Our phones are not personed right now. You can call our number and leave a message, but we prefer you go to our website. And there you can learn how to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit working to keep religion out of government and doing all kinds of publicity about non-believers, such as our radio show. Tune in next week for more Irrational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope so.